Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Mark Bloom, longtime Jewish musician, composer, arranger, recording artist, and creator of the new musical experience, Harmonic Convergence, Jewish Gospel, Sharing a Common Spiritual Path. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our shinshinim, Chen Denachi and Tamir Shakuri. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. There was a controversial graduation speech given at one of my alma maters, Hebrew Union College in Los Angeles, during their commencement ceremony a couple of weeks ago. It was given by author Michael Chabon. He's the author of Cavalier and Clay and the Yiddish Policeman's Union and the Wonder Boys and lots of other very successful books. Now, generally speaking, commencement addresses are notable only for their similarity one to another and for their lack of, shall I say, freshness. One graduation speech is usually very much like every other one. For example, I went to my son's graduation from Vanderbilt University a month ago or so, and the commencement address, delivered by a notable and very hip person who shall remain nameless, included references to and quotations from Mahatma Gandhi and Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., as well as Robert Frost's ridiculously famous poem, The Road Not Taken. You know the one. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, blah, 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 and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. I actually think that perhaps when you give a commencement address, you are legally required to refer to Gandhi, MLK, and to misuse the Frost poem. I'm sure I've heard those same references and that poem in a very high percentage of the many graduations I've attended or participated in, just as I'm pretty sure that a minimum of 75% of all weddings must begin with Pachelbel's Canon in D. You know the tune, right? Anyway, although this may be the case for almost all graduations, Michael Chabon's commencement address at Hebrew Union College in Los Angeles was not like every other graduation talk. In fact, it was quite the exception. Instead of regurgitated platitudes about heroes and quotations so famous and overused as to lose all meaning, Chabon instead chose to write and deliver a long, poetic exploration of his feelings and thoughts about boundaries and blendings, focusing on in-marriage, endogamy in Judaism, and its paradoxes. He also, in the course of a heartfelt and thoughtful exploration of these subjects, made it clear that he is deeply opposed to the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and the treatment of Palestinians in Gaza. Along the way, Michael Chabon noted the irony of the fact that he himself is unmarried, his wife, his past two Jewish guest, author Ayelet Waldman, and that his children are very much the product of Jewish inbreeding. Still, Chabon basically came out as philosophically, if not practically, opposed to Jews marrying Jews. To say that this was a controversial way to address a group of future Reform rabbis and educators, leaders of the next wave of liberal Jewish commitment, is to understate the case a lot. But then, Chabon is Jewish and opinionated, so of course you can never be sure what he'll say, right? The way Chabon's talk has been reported in the Jewish press, I don't think the rest of the press has time to cover it, since covering President Trump takes 24 hours a day, right? Anyway, the way Chabon's talk has been described in the Jewish press is very harsh. It said, Michael Chabon attacks Jewish in-marriage and Israel's occupation in speech to rabbinical students. One online news feed, JTA, said. Haaretz, the liberal Israeli newspaper's headline read, in speech to new rabbis, Michael Chabon slams occupation and Jewish in-marriage. The more conservative Jewish press was predictably even more outraged. For example, the Zionist Organization of America said, ZOA urges HUC Reform Rabbinical School condemn your Israel Judaism bashing commencement speaker Michael Chabon. The response to Chabon's speech was so strong and immediate, one HUC graduate walked out and wrote an op-ed against it in the Jewish press, that the college's president passed to Jewish guest and personal friend of mine, Dr. David Ellenson, and its dean, Rabbi Joshua Holo, released a carefully worded statement saying that the whole point of liberal Judaism was to be open to various opinions and perspectives. And although they didn't know what Chabon was going to say in advance, he could say it. Now, without addressing how appropriate the subject was for that moment, the commencement of future Reform rabbis and educators, it's worthwhile examining what Michael Chabon actually said and the ideas he explored. They are interesting, challenging, and have a basis in history. Judaism in its present form, as he noted, evolved from its original biblical basis in Israel and Talmudic development in Babylonia into a remarkable melange of traditions, cultural infusions, and constantly changing expressions. Being Jewish is certainly based on an ancient and powerful spiritual, religious, and ethical civilization. But we Jews have been around for so long, closing in on 4,000 years, and have so much to contribute to the world precisely because we've been able to incorporate the best spiritual, moral, and religious ideas of many others into our own Judaism without losing our essential beliefs. Biblical Judaism didn't have a real code of daily law, halacha. It wasn't really portable to countries outside of Israel, lacking synagogues and texts. Rabbinic Judaism figured out how to make Jewish law portable and gave us synagogues and movable texts and rules, but it didn't have much of a mystical tradition or any real philosophy. Medieval and early modern Judaism added mysticism and Jewish philosophy, but didn't have a way to live in a world in which Jews could fully participate in the regular civic life as free people. Modern Jewish movements like Reform and Modern Orthodoxy and Conservative Judaism have given us the ability to be both fully contemporary and fully Jewish. But we didn't initially know what to do with the renewed Jewish state of Israel, and so on. In every era, we have added and changed and developed Judaism by integrating new ideas and experiences that came from outside of our initial community. I'm not saying I agree with Michael Chabon's view of the Israeli occupation. It is one-sided. It gives the Palestinians no responsibility for their actions and choices, no volition at all, as though they had done nothing whatsoever on their own. I'm not saying that I agree with Michael Chabon's rather hypocritical praise of intermarriage as the solution to a religious culture that only turns inward. But I am saying that he makes a fascinating, accurate assessment about the richness and true strength of Judaism. Judaism is not by any stretch of anyone's imagination a monolithic or unicultural experience. It changes in every era and in every place, and it will and must continue to change so that Judaism can continue to bring blessing to the world, as it has for four millennia on every inhabited continent and virtually in every country on earth. Our guest this morning, Mark Bloom, brings musical blessings himself through his varied and interesting work, combining musical forms and musicians, mixing traditional Jewish music with jazz, blues, and now gospel. Learn about Mark Bloom, hear some of his newest music when we return in a moment on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town, amazing dining, and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
To welcome our guest this morning, musician Mark Bloom, here's a bit of his jazz Shabbat, Hine Matov.
Hine Matov Umanayim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad.
Hine Matov Umanayim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad.
Hine Matov, Hine Matov.
Lai la lai la lai la lai la lai.
Hine Matov, Hine Matov.
Lai la lai la 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 la. Hine Matov Umanayim. Lai la lai 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 la lai la la. Hine Matov Umanayim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad.
Hinei mato, hinei mato.
Lai, 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 lai.
Hinei mato, hinei mato.
Lai, 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 lai.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish Mark Bloom. He's an outstanding Jewish musician and, to my way of thinking, combines jazz and pop and many interesting themes, now gospel, with Jewish music in a charming and entertaining way. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Well, it's good to be here, Sam. Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about how you decided to go into this unique field of Jewish music.
Well, in the secular world, I played what I guess you would call black music originally, or jazz and R&B, or music that the black experience here in North America resonates to. And of course, being Jewish and being originally at a conservative synagogue, I found equal footing in that area. So I thought to myself, can we combine them? Can we fuse these things? And of course, my original tenor said, no, you can't.
You know, he shouldn't have said that.
I asked him why. And of course, he gave me, because you can't.
Yeah, because it hasn't been done before, so you can't do it. Steht geschrieben, as we say.
You know, the idea that you have a different style and you have musical instruments involved with a Yom Tov experience, including the Shabbat, you know, is obviously something that was contrary to how they were taught. But I think that cantor did miss out on a teaching moment. He could have taught me about how the temples were destroyed and how the sages at the time forbade musical instruments from being in a Jewish prayer setting as a means of mourning. You know, I would have understood that, but he just said, no, you can't.
Speaking as a member of the Cantor's Assembly and a conservative chazan, I remember when the answers were like that. It obviously did not permanently dissuade you.
No, it didn't, because I found a musical colleague in Rabbi Joe Black here in Minneapolis, who in the early part of his career exposed me to a lot of the music that was going on in the camps and the alternative things and things by Craig Townsend, who is a conservative Jew, and may she rest in peace, David Friedman, and so forth. So I got the opportunity to listen and hear these things, and I saw that it was possible to do something more that bridges contemporary American, or whatever you would like to call it, pop, folk, rock, and Judaism.
Sorry, just in the interest of full disclosure, I should note that Rabbi Joe Black's an old friend and a multiple past guest of Two Jewish, and I hired Craig Taubman to do his first High Holy Day service in the 1980s when I was an assistant cantor. So it's funny how these Jewish musical circles end up being very small.
Well, I can see that, and I've often spoken to Craig, and I said, Craig, you must have had a lot more obstacles to what you were trying to do via the conservative movement versus the reform movement.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I've always admired him for that. And Joe's very, very, very charismatic, vibrant, knowledgeable, and very sharp.
We'll hear more about you. Thank you for those important connections and influences. And we'll hear some of your music as well when we come back in a few moments with Mark Bloom on Two Jewish. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast top 10 in North America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our Shin Shinim on Israel Tamir Shakurian Chendinachi. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
You guys are getting close to the end of your Shnat Sherud, of your year of service, which is what makes Shin Shinim. It stands for Shnat Sherud, the year of service, the additional year of service. Some of your friends have done it in Israel. Some of them have done it in other places. That means the next thing that comes up on your agenda is going into the IDF, going into the army. What I remembered was women serve 2 years and men serve 3 years. That's provided they didn't become officers or sign up for becoming pilots or something. That's not so true anymore. Tell us a little bit about how it all works.
So that has recently changed. Our year is actually, I think, the first year to have that change. So now it's 2 years and 4 months for girls and 2 years and 8 months for boys. I think they're trying to like close the gap slowly to not really irritate anyone, but slowly they will close it. I feel like that's the goal. It's currently just a 4 month difference. And I feel like it's because it used to be that men serve in more combat positions and then their training would take longer. So it wouldn't be worth it to keep them for just 2 years. So they would stay for three. But now since women are in key combat positions, their training takes just as long. So they decided to narrow the gap down. It's part of the equality kind of process the military is going through. It is currently very, like, I feel like it's very equal for men and women. I'm sure there's still some things that are issues, but it's definitely making a very fast progress in the way it treats women.
So that also means, Tamir, that, you know, if you figured you were going to be doing 3 years, now it's 2 years and 8 months. That's different.
Yeah, it is different. I just realized that recently, and it really depends on you, because I think that having those 4 months that I was counting on staying in my position might allow me to try to explore new things, maybe trying to be a commander or an officer. And so it is a change. I think that the army goal is to eventually get to a point where 2 years and 6 months is the normal time to serve for men and women. So they're slowly getting there. And as a brother to a combat soldier sister, I think that it is great, and that some people just really find their place in the army. And it's okay to have a base that is lower than it used to be, base time to serve, because it allows a lot of people to really discover new ways that they can contribute to the army.
Everybody I know that's heard you wishes you the best of luck in the army. And we can talk a little bit more about what comes next next time. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
The Boy Scouts of America have gone through many changes over the last 5 years, and you may not know about them. The Boy Scouts now include boys who are members of the LGBT community and leaders from the LGBT community. Just last year, a pilot program for boys 5 years old and in kindergarten was added, and a family program for girls 5 through 9 years old who can now join Cub Scouts. A key Boy Scout law says a scout is reverent and duty to God is now a component for scout rank. Interfaith prayer is used whenever members of multiple faiths are present. In the early 70s, some Jewish organizations dropped sponsorship of scouting because of the lack of inclusion, but it's time for the Jewish community to return to its support for this great organization. Judaism shares principles that are represented and taught by the Boy Scouts of America. Scouting's a great place to inculcate good values and a shared philosophy, develop better adjusted and contributing young people who will become future leaders. Scouting is more than camping. It's a variety of activities promoting physical and mental health and emotional growth. Scouting schedules activities so as not to interfere with religious and other family activities and to include other members of the nuclear family. Scouting's an enhancement of religious, communal, and familial life. And that's true from the youngest level of scouting. Currently, only one unit chartered by a Jewish organization, PAC 613 in Tucson, exists in the state of Arizona. If you are in the Tucson area, contact Herb at Shofarman, Shofarman at AOL.com, or call the Catalina Council at 520-750-0385. That's 750-0385. New members are very welcome in the scouting family. Scouting's there for all members, in good times and bad, helping in every way. Contact the Scouting Council in your area. Go to www.beascout.org or www.my.scouting.org. Ask your local council if they have a Jewish committee on scouting who can come to your synagogue or organization and see if scouting is just the thing to further your mission to the community. You can also contact the National Jewish Committee on Scouting, www.jewishscouting.org. Scouting is great for you and your family. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about Poland and about a trip that you took with some high school kids years ago. And, well, I'll let you reset it up and tell us the conclusion of the story.
Okay, so this was the experience that really caused me to rethink the role of Poles in the Holocaust and how Poles treated Jews, et cetera, et cetera. And when we left off, this group of kids had been thrown off a train because the train crossed the border from Poland into what was then Czechoslovakia at a crossing point open only to the citizens of both countries. Of either country, but not other countries.
Not America.
Right. And not Greeks or Germans or anybody else. So the town where we got off, the station was called Nowy Sącz, a place I had never heard of, had no idea that it once was home to a big Jewish community. The woman in charge of this hotel was a very matronly, forceful character who said, "I'll make them pay," referring to her theoretical bosses at Orbis in Warsaw. So we went to sleep.
The Polish tour agency under communism.
We got up, we davened, because this was a religious group. Kids put on tefillin every morning, whatever, we had a space to do that. And the woman was watching this. And she came up to us after morning prayers with tears streaming down her face and said, "I haven't seen Jews praying since I was a child during the war. My family hid Jewish children, and I watched them pray."
Oh, my God.
So her family were like the righteous non-Jews who saved Jewish lives. And then she really acted very generously. She chartered a bus to take us all the way to Budapest. She called the Hungarian equivalent, which was not Orbis, but something like Ebus. She told them that we would be late through no fault of our own and that they should keep our hotel reservation. We would just start it one day later. She gave us sack lunches for the long bus ride. And she gave us what was then worth its weight in gold, which was a bottle of Coke for each kid, which was like the equivalent to giving each kid a diamond ring, practically.
Yeah, yeah.
It was way over and above the call of duty. And she said, "Don't worry about paying me. It brings joy to my heart to see that there are still Jews living and praying and traveling, and you can't imagine how much this means to me." So here in the middle of nowhere, in some little border town, what could have been a nightmare turns into this wonderfully moving and educational experience, not only for the kids, but also for the adults who were staffing the trip. Who knew? And therefore, ever since, I've realized that just as was the case everywhere else, when people talk about, oh, all the French are anti-Semitic or whatever. No, there's a whole range of attitudes, emotions, behaviors among any group regarding almost any subject, including Jews.
Very powerful story, and certainly absolutely correct. I'm looking forward to being in Poland and experiencing some of it myself with my son not too long. Thanks,
Tom. I wish you a very good trip.
Thank you. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Sadie is attending a wedding, and she's stopped by an usher at the entrance to the synagogue. The usher asks, "Are you a friend of the bride?" Sadie quickly replies, "Of course not. I'm the groom's mother." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week our portion features drama and tragedy, rebellion and punishment. To recap last week's events, the people of Israel have come to the borders of the Promised Land just 2 years after leaving Egyptian slavery. But a team of spies returns with a poor report. "We aren't strong enough to conquer the land. Shocked, the Israelites rebel against the leadership of Moses and Aaron. The rebellion fails and a verdict is proclaimed. A lack of faith in God lies at the heart of the problem. God decides that this generation can never come into the Holy Land and will have to live in Sinai for 38 more years until they are all gone. And a new generation, fresh with the optimism of youth and untainted by slavery in its mentality, can come forward. Stung by this sentence of death in the desert, at the start of this week's portion, a group of rebels under the leadership of a priest, a Levite named Korach, challenges the control of Moses and Aaron. He accuses them of hubris, of chutzpah, of overweening pride and egotism. Born into the same tribe, the Levites, Korach is an insider rebelling against his own kin. "Who are these guys, Moses and Aaron, to take on the authority of ruling over us?" he asks. His rebellion threatens the very foundations of the Israelites' leadership. For if the God of liberation is not at the heart of this enterprise, if it's all a matter of personal ego and self-aggrandizement, they might as well go back to Egypt and live in slavery, and some propose now to do so. But Korach dissembles. He lies. For Moses clearly had no great desire for his high office. He has held it as a sacred trust given to him by God. Korach threatens God's authority, not Moses. Our Torah portion tells us that in order to determine the ongoing leadership of Israel, a great outdoor contest is held, a kind of religious challenge match, and the net result is that Korach and his followers are completely destroyed while Moses and Aaron are fully vindicated. It's always nice when God has your back. One lesson of Korach is that before we accuse others of arrogance, we need to look in the mirror. But the even more abiding lesson is that a Judaism that doesn't base itself in humility and reverence for God, and which is focused on personal aggrandizement, will fail. Only through faith and devotion do we have the chance to reach our own promised land. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Mark Bloom, will tell us what it was like to work with a full gospel choir, how his harmonic convergence work integrates Jewish music and African-American religious music into a remarkable whole. All when we return in a moment here on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Argentina has canceled a World Cup warm-up match with Israel, folding under political pressure over Israel's response to riots and terrorism by Palestinians in Gaza. Argentine striker Gonzalez Higuain said the game, called a friendly in soccer terminology, has been canceled. The Israeli embassy in Argentina tweeted to confirm the football match between the two countries was off. Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu called Argentine President Mauricio Macri in an attempt to salvage the friendly, which would have been played in Jerusalem. News of the cancellation was met with cheers in Gaza, where at least 120 Palestinians have died during recent Palestinian attempts to storm the border fence and to send terrorists into Israel. In Ramallah, in the West Bank, the Palestinian Football Association issued a statement thanking Argentine striker Lionel Messi and his colleagues for the cancellation. Palestinian soccer chairman Jibril Rajoub, the former security chief of Gaza who lost his job there when Hamas routed Fatah in the Palestinian Civil War about 10 years ago, Jibril Rajoub had called for Palestinians to burn replica shirts and pictures of Messi, perhaps the most famous football player in the world. The match, which was to be Argentina's final game before the start of their World Cup campaign in Russia later this month, was set to be played at a stadium in West Jerusalem. Palestinians, who irrationally claim that the eastern part of Jerusalem must be the capital of a future Palestinian state, were angered by a decision to relocate the game to what is unquestionably the Israeli modern section of Jerusalem. The game was originally scheduled to be played in Haifa. Some weird and disturbing news from the religious sphere right here in America. First, a Dallas-area church has included Judaism in a lecture series warning members about dangerous isms, including liberalism, alcoholism, materialism, and pessimism. The items, defined in a flyer as a distinctive practice, system, or ideology, are part of the Greenville Avenue Church of Christ in Richardson, Texas's summer lecture series. The lectures will shed light on these topics and provide a proper response by the Christian, the promotional material says. Minister Shelton Gibbs III defended the series held at his church. "We're not here to criticize or be antagonistic towards people and to beat them down," he told the Dallas News. "There's no threat. The people in the community should not feel a threat." The church has been attacked on social media for appearing to equate Judaism with some of the other items on the list. Islamism also appears on the list. One social media user said that he had filed a complaint with the IRS to threaten the church's tax-exempt status. Several Muslim and Jewish leaders in the Dallas area offered to meet with Gibbs and other members of the church's leadership in an attempt to start a dialogue. The church, which appears to be predominantly African-American in membership, is a large suburban Church of Christ-affiliated congregation in suburban Dallas. Judaism as a dangerous ism in America. Wow. And then the old evil man, 85-year-old Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, attacked Jews and Judaism during a three-hour sermon from his pulpit at Mosque Mariam in Chicago last month. The May 27th sermon was his first major public speaking appearance since February. During his sermon, Farrakhan, a known anti-Semite, warned his listeners about satanic Jews who have infected the whole world with poison and deceit. Farrakhan claimed that contemporary Jews are responsible for promoting child molestation, misogyny, police brutality, and sexual assault, among other social ills. In addition, he asserted that contemporary Judaism is nothing but a system of tricks and lies that you study in order to learn how to dominate non-Jews. Farrakhan also said that the false Jew will lead you to filth and indecency. That's who runs show business, that's who runs the record industry, that's who runs television. He might even have a slight point there, maybe. Farrakhan alleged that Jews force aspiring actors to submit to anal sex. "Do you know how many of us go to Hollywood seeking a chance, have to submit to it and all kinds of debauchery before they give you a little part?" he asked. "It's called the casting couch. That's Jewish power." Farrakhan used disgraced Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein, who was Jewish, as proof of his allegations. Farrakhan also said that President Barack Obama was under Jewish influence when he advocated the legalization of same-sex marriage. Marriage equality, Farrakhan informed his audience, is satanic. The day before his speech, Louis Farrakhan appeared on a Chicago radio station and said that President Donald Trump has helped his cause by destroying the enemies of the Nation of Islam. Included in this group are the Department of Justice and the FBI. Wow. Well, maybe we've had enough of Farrakhan by now. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. Welcome back our guest, Mark Bloom. Here's his Are You Ready from his Harmonic Convergence Shabbat, his version, a gospel version of the Baruch Hu.
Are you ready?
Blessings flow. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Mark Bloom is the extraordinarily talented Jewish musician who's done a variety of kind of Jewish fusion music in jazz and now gospel, and has also written some very entertaining kind of swingy cuts for Jewish holidays, too. Mark, tell us about, you do something that not everybody does. You tend to integrate traditional melodies that people would know or might know with very different presentations, particularly jazzy and now gospel kinds of settings.
Because I appreciate the traditional melody, and I know that people who love traditional Jewish music love to hold on to their appreciation of that melody. But if you can color the background, whether it's harmonically and rhythmically in something that's a little bit, well, hipper, shall we say, it'll attract, I think, a lot more people. And that's kind of why I originally did that type of thing. That was my original approach, was to try and keep the keva, as we say in prayer, consistent. But the kavanah is what would be the arrangement. And that's something that I guess I, as the composer or arranger, would put my influence on.
It's a great and extraordinarily traditional point, by the way, that kind of interplay between keva and kavanah, the established fixed form of prayer, or in this case, fixed melody, you know, a music that comes out of Nusach, combined with your own interpretive kavanah, the direction of your heart, if you will, to create your own music. Tell us about how working on this harmonic convergence and the gospel music that you started to work in, not just started, but that you've now developed into really something quite fascinating.
Yeah. On June 22nd, we're going to do our fifth annual, presentation of the service with the a Grammy Award-winning Sounds of Blackness. And they are centered here in the Twin Cities. And I've known many of their members over the years. I've performed with them at secular functions, whether it's a wedding or a nightclub. And I remember years ago I was playing jazz at a nightclub, and the saxophone player came into the lavatory and proclaimed, "Man, that was a religious experience." Couldn't be farther from the truth. At the time, there was smoke all over the place. There was, you know, the usual behavior that takes place in a place where people are taking alcohol and shoving it down their throats and so forth. And I just dismissed it at the time. But then I thought to myself, the comparison that you were talking about, or the metaphor for prayer, where you have keva, which is the fixed prayer, which always remains the same, and kavanah, it's very akin to jazz. The keva would be standards by great American composers. Many of them happen to be Jewish, of course. And the kavanah is the jazz interpretation. You know, whether it's a saxophonist, you know, taking My Favorite Things and from Sound of Music.
Yeah, whether it's John Coltrane's My Favorite Things, which is, you know, the same notes, but not the same experience.
No, not the same experience. Little pauses here and there. You kind of flavor it to how your heart is telling you which way to go. And so we came up, actually, Joe Black is the one who suggested that we do a jazz Shabbat service, which is not uncommon. I think a lot of times around the country I've experienced people would do a jazz Shabbat, but jazz is kind of a description of something that's out of the norm and not necessarily jazz.
What's the most difficult thing about integrating these two traditions? You make it seem so effortless. I expect it's not.
No, the difficult thing is, I think more in the perception of people and the practice of being able to sing in a syncopated fashion. I mean, I work with a lot of cantors, and many of them do their best, but often struggle to syncopate, to let loose, to explore the right side of their brains as they sing.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because, you know, cantorial music is improvisational by nature.
By nature, but also the tremolo that an operatic singer
right, a classical trained voice. Yeah, it
classically trained voice.
Doesn't work in jazz. Yeah.
No, it doesn't. Sometimes a lot of people are kind of stuck. This is their training, and they don't know how to release themselves from that. So that's the most problematic that I find. I don't find the process of arranging this music in this fashion that difficult. This is what I hear. When I hear a melody, whether it's a melody from a Broadway musical, or whether it's the melody for Anto Hino, or whether it's a melody, you know, from High Holidays liturgy, I'm constantly hearing other voices, other harmonics, other rhythms. You know, that's what I hear. So it's not too difficult for me. It's more difficult, I think, for those that take a traditional approach to sacred Jewish music and have a difficult time, taking those risks. Because with jazz music, unless you take those risks, nothing goes forward.
When you work with gospel music, and again, it's often traditional melodies, although sometimes you're using some other melodies, integrated into gospel arrangements. It must be really fun to work with choirs that sound like that. Jewish choirs, no matter how good they are, do not sound like gospel choirs.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had a couple people that wanted me to present this in their environment, and then they were even people that had a relationship with a black church. And it is a Jewish service, by the way, so people should understand that it does follow a typical evening Arvit model. But the cantor at the synagogue said, well, they won't rehearse with us. I said, why? Well, they just won't rehearse with us. And generally speaking, most of the traditional Jewish chorales, professional and positive, professional and professional and non-professional, professional, they like SATB scores.
Yeah, yeah, they like four-part scores, you know, pretty set.
And it's difficult to read those things with syncopation that you need to. I've endeavored over the years to be as accurate as I can. But when I do note values and so forth.
Yeah, but I mean, it's difficult to tell somebody, okay, this swings. if they're used to classical singing and classical arrangements. I do think more singers are more diverse today than ever before. People do all kinds of different sorts of music if they're professional singers.
I think so. And I think that many cantors in this country are now able to move outside the operatic style and do things that are that show a bit more of a diversity in tone. But for a while, as I was first presenting this, and this is back to the early 90s, I was encountering a lot of obstruction to this. Mm-hmm. People telling me that this is not the way to go, and that I came to Jewish music through the back door, and I didn't go to a classical conservatory to be properly trained. I've even had a couple of Jewish composers that are still out there composing stuff that say, well, you don't find black people doing versions of Hava Nagila.
No.
You know, and I say, well, you know, if Hava Nagila were a bit more compelling than just a two-beat polka kind of thing, then maybe we'd hear that. again, there's always going to be subjectivity involved, and I think that for the most part, I still get a lot of people. I know you're involved with the CA. I presented at the CA, and get very friendly, kind responses at the at their conventions,
sure.
But never get much of a call.
Yeah.
And the same thing?
No, I think there's a reason the conservative movement is conservative with a small c. Sometimes it's difficult for to embrace new ideas. And the reform movement has tended to be more open.
And I think so, Sam. For the most part, I do this not as an idea of putting aside the foundational elements, but I think that that's the first place that a lot of people go to. It's a threat. You're changing it up. Is this what Jewish sacred music is going to come to?
Right.
And I say, no, of course not. This is an alternative. This is, to use the metaphor that we had, Keva and Kavanah, that's to demonstrate that. I can't think of anything that demonstrates that more than jazz.
So, Mark, what's more fun for you, jazz or gospel?
I think, sort of even. It depends. If I'm at home, I'm going to be doing jazz. If I'm with a group of gospel singers, I'm going to do that. You know, that's going to be a lot of fun. It's really a lot of fun. So it's an entree for a lot of these people who are mostly Christian to get to know a little bit more about Judaism. And in many respects, I'm kind of like a tour guide for them via music.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about how gospel choirs rehearse. I remember working with some African-American churches when I had choirs in, when I was a rabbi in South Carolina. And the directors often didn't read music, but boy, could they sing. You know, someone would hit a note and then they'd fill in the chord and then they were really kind of off to the races. But you had to kind of be able to let go and just go with that. And our choir was used to reading music. So when you work with gospel choirs now, do you find them more musically trained than they might have been 15 or 20 years ago?
Well, I would say more musically able, whether it's trained or not. I think they get it. You know, I think that we've had a model for decorum in synagogue that doesn't empower the kind of energy and, as you said, the sort of looseness that to throw inhibitions aside. I haven't seen a great many changes with the gospel people. They really do love this music. I've never had somebody come up to me and say, well, where's Jesus? You know, they understand from the get-go that we're trying to form a relationship on things that we agree on. And as far as how they tune themselves to the occasion, I think they're very, very respectful. And at least I've had that experience. I've not had a negative experience at all from those people that are involved with gospel music.
Mark, where can people go to find out more about your music and to hear more of it?
Well, there's markbloom.com, and there's samples of the music there. There's also a Facebook site for Harmonic Convergence Spiritual Soul Food, which is what I've that's a Facebook page, and you'll find out more information. Because when I first started calling it a gospel service, I got a very abrupt negative response from clergy.
Gosh, I'm stunned to hear that. I know it's gospel music. I'm teasing, but I should say I love that it's soul food and it is delicious. I want to thank Mark Bloom for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Thank you so much.
Sam, good Shabbos to you, and thank you for talking.
A good week. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out from Mark Bloom.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be nutritionist Beth Warren, author of the new book, Secrets of a Kosher Girl, a 21-day nourishing plan to lose weight and feel great even if you're not Jewish. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes, Top 10 in America, or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our playout this morning comes from our guest today, Mark Bloom, his jazzy Yismachu for Shabbat. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.